Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Alrighty, third hour here on the show. What's happening? Tiki and Tierney, Tiki Barber, Brandon Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. And we're coming to you from the Rocket Mortgage Studio. When you want the ability to adjust your loan options in real time, Rocket can. Hope all is well. Final hour. A lot of time on the Bills and the Titans. The situation with Le'Veon Bell. The yips for Jose Altuve. The Astros in the process of getting broomed by the Rays, who, strangely enough, I'm now cheering for, despite them dumping our Yankees out the side door, Teak. We obviously spent some time on the Power Five and how they might break away. Teaky's been on top of that, so it was a good conversation. And now, Teak, we get a chance to show just how much we know about hockey. Nobody knows hockey like this show. Nobody. Nobody knows hockey like that. Nobody. And we're joined now by the winning coach of the Tampa Bay Lightning, John Cooper. And if there's one thing we know about hockey, it's that the celebration, it takes weeks, if not months, to end. So, Coach, first of all, congrats on the championship. Where is the cup right now, John? Who's got the cup? Where is it?
Oh, thanks for having me, boys.
Squeeze, yeah, of
a little
course.
Hockey in here. You know what? Actually, the cup was at a community ice rink last night. There was a whole bunch of hockey teams were with it. But where it's exactly today, I don't know. But I'll tell you one thing, does it ever attract a crowd? It's one thing winning it, but to see the look on people's faces when they actually get in front of it is it's something special. So it's pretty cool to be around it.
Yeah, no, it's got to be definitely cool. And I learn about hockey when the head coach of the winning team puts on a UVA hat as inspiration from UVA's, 16-1 loss and then goes and wins the championship. They're still reigning, by the way, because there was no NCAA tournament. But you guys did something very similar. And I listened to your post-game press conference, and I know the emotion that it had to – really, not emotion, but the leadership it took to get through something like that, and then to go through an entire postseason in a bubble. I mean, you were there for, what, 80 days, 80-something days? And tell us about the journey once the postseason started for you guys.
Yeah, it was a grind. Virginia well, and it was it's funny – when we lost to Columbus last year, we got swept. And people that don't know, we had a record-setting year, and we won 62 games. And people thought, it was going to be the year for us. And we didn't even win a playoff game. We were out in four. And, is that just demoralizing? And it's funny to sit here today and say, oh, yeah, look how it all worked out. But you don't feel that way during the year. And the Virginia team was a lot of inspiration because how we felt, they must have felt the exact same thing, being the first team to, lose to a 16 seed. And so something we hung on to and brought it in with the players. It was funny, Nikita Kucherov, who is a star player in the league, and he's a Russian, and he asked me, well, we're in the post-game celebration, about that hat. And he's like, Coach, where's that hat? Where's that hat? And some of these things you do with players, you never think, you don't know if they're holding on to it or if it's part of them, but it's one of the first things he thought of. So it was awesome, and it's kind of a little connection we have with them. But, that the whole process was, it was surreal, just as that pause went on and not knowing when we were going to restart. And I think it was like 4 months before, in between when we played. But it was, I think it really helped our team. And we made so many trades, and we brought in a bunch of new players. We were kind of trying to find ourselves, and that 4 months off, I think, gave our team a little time to glue, a little time to rest, and we came back to training camp, like I said, with a mission that we weren't going to let people down this year. And I mean, the boys bought in, and they played as well as I've ever, by the end of the playoffs, Like, the team was practically coaching themselves. They were on a mission, those players.
Stop. You're selling yourself short. We can't let that fly. They weren't coaching themselves. You're as cerebral as it gets. But I do want to, and we're talking to John Cooper, Lightning head coach, very humble, and it's nice of you to say that. But we all know that it's not true because you have to coach. I mean, hockey, like the NFL, baseball maybe to an extent, you kind of write the lineup and you sit back and you hope you get the three-run bomb and maybe manage the bullpen. But hockey, you know, you're mixing and matching lines. You're doing a lot more than you let on. But I am curious, John. Because the knock, rightly or wrongly, I know you heard it, and I know it was written about for sure, especially who you lost to last year, whose personality and temperament is the complete opposite of yours. Torts is a nut job. We had him with the Rangers. He's loud. He's fiery. He's boisterous. He's bold. He's nuts. And he's not afraid to use that press conference as a weapon a lot of times. When you lose to him and your style is so much more inward, if you will, and cerebral and calculating, The criticisms that you felt that were not about at your team, that were directed at John Cooper, maybe the motivator. How did you process that? I mean, because you can't change your personality, and you didn't, but I know you heard that stuff. How did that affect you?
Yeah, it's tough because, like, the reason you get to a certain point, I believe, is, like, you believe in what you're doing. You have to have a little bit of an ego along the way to handle, you know, all the things you have to do when you coach pro sports. You get to the position, though, especially when you have a team that people are talking about as being a championship-caliber team. We've been close in years past, 2015 finals, two conference finals after that. But you get there, and then you lose to a Columbus team that, to be honest, like, they play better than us. And we weren't, you know, we came in, you know, pretty arrogant. Like, I always said we had a little offensive arrogance to us. And they had a game plan, and they beat us. And you know, Torts, that's why he's a good coach. Like, Torts has survived this long because he's good at his job. And yep. He has a different personality. There's no doubt. He's going to hate me for saying this, but what he says outside of this is different than what he is in how I've been with him, because he's a super nice guy, but he's a motivator and he does a heck of his job with his teams. And it's ironic how we ended up playing them in the first round this year, because it wasn't set up that way before pre-pause for us to play him, but we had to play him. And I think, if you remember, we played our very first playoff game, went to 5 overtimes. And if we don't win that game, who knows where we go. But we won that game, and I think it was like a huge weight off our shoulders and kind of propelled us from there.
Yeah, no, you know, I know that you stopped by Donatella's in Tampa with the cup, and you were sitting down with my brother for a little bit, and he told me a little background. He said, you were a defense attorney, man. And I was like, wait, how do you make that transition to what you're doing now? But you did, and defense was a big part of the success, Victor Hedman obviously being the Conn Smythe Trophy winner. But, you know, talk about your players, and your goalie was unbelievable, especially in the closeout game. Your personality, while it's cerebral, I don't think is passive.
Yeah, it's the one thing is, if you're to win, yes, the coaches have to help and show guidance. Yes, of course we do, but you need to have good players. And if you want to win a championship, your best players have to be your best players. And in this playoffs, they were. And our goalie, who got, you know, was 0-4 last year, came in with this renewed confidence and was on a mission. And he was the only goalie in the playoffs to play every single minute. You know, you try and pull him out for a break, and he's like, nope, keep me in there. Victor Hedman, you know, he wins the Conn Smythe Trophy for MVP. And then you look at you know, Nikita Kucherov, Braden Point, go down the list. Like, those are the guys that led the way. And so when your best guys are your best guys, it sure makes it easier to coach. And then even, you know, Steven Stamkos, who was injured the whole time, gosh, came in for 3 minutes of hockey and the entire thing and scored a goal. So when the big boys are rolling, it sure makes it a little better for you.
So that's John Cooper, the Lightning head coach. They have hoisted the cup. And I tell you, how about the city of Tampa right now, coach? You guys win the cup. The Rays are a win away from the World Series. Mm-hmm. Tom Brady's playing for the Bucks. Tampa's got to be on fire. It's got to be popping.
Yeah, it's been great. Of course, you know, when all these great things are happening, and it's just been unfortunate that, you know, fans haven't been able to be in the building to watch some of this stuff happen. But it was phenomenal when we won, and we get a lot of support. There's a lot of synergy between the three teams in town. And, you know, the guys brought the Stanley Cup to the Bucks game a few weeks ago, and awesome experience. And then and now the Rays are one game, and we've had a lot of contact with the Rays, and unbelievable guys. Kevin Cash is the man. He's a super super guy. And so we're all pulling for him, and hopefully, you know, this has been the year of Tampa sports.
Yeah, no, it feels like it is heading that way for whatever reason. I think it's a good thing. But let's back up to the bubble. I mean, you guys were in Canada for a long time. The NBA obviously successfully concluded their bubble. The NHL did it as well. I don't think you guys had any positive tests either. Maybe you did, but I don't remember hearing anything significant. We know the NBA didn't. Next season is not that far away. How do you see the bubble, and more importantly, what's happening when hockey resumes relatively soon?
Yeah, that question's way above my pay grade. I don't know what we're going to do, but to be honest, the bubble experience, I can't believe how they threw it together like they did. And I'm not going to lie, it was tough. You know, we were gone 65 days, and when you put yourself in a hotel and there's not a lot of outdoor time, and, you know, it's a little difficult. You're not getting to spend time and go through these ups and downs with your family members. Thank goodness for FaceTime. That was big in today's day and age. But I'll tell you, brought our team together. It's an experience I will never forget. And, yes, because we won the Stanley Cup, of course, it makes it easier. But it's weird when you're in a hotel room and, you know, there's eight other teams there and there's nobody else, and you're going to your meal and you're walking by the teams you're playing against. And it was I would talk to people I never normally would talk to. And so just there were really cool experiences to come out of it. I don't know if pro sports can continue doing this bubble thing for year after year after year.
I hope not.
But, ugh. Yeah, right? It's because it's a fan's game. Like, that's why a lot of players play. They want to play in front of the fans. It's they're part of that experience. And so hopefully this doesn't have to go on any further. I think it might have to for the time being. But what the NHL did and the NBA did, and kind of what and Major League Baseball is doing, is they're making the experience pretty cool on TV, and hopefully this is the only year it happens. But kudos on the leagues for plugging through and making it safe.
It looked pretty sweet on TV, like just the way the arena and the rink looked. It looked pretty, like visually it was pretty good. And listen, John, I think you're right. When you charge out of a tunnel in front of 20,000 people, whether it's at home in a swing game or on the road in a swing game, the 20,000 cheers or the 20,000 boos, that's a validation of making it to a level that 99.9% of us can only dream of making. Otherwise, I could just play in the street with my buddies like I did growing up when I pretended I was Brian Trottier and Dennis Botvin and Mike Botsy, and I'm getting the same response. I'm getting crickets. I mean, it's got to be tough. But I did want to follow up. Tiki addressed the way the NBA season finished, and you say it's above your pay grade. I get that. But the NBA season is going to start in 2021, and there's now residue, in all likelihood, 2021. Now there's residue from an elongated, strange season bleeding into months that it never bleeds into. How do you preemptively, whenever you guys get back on the ice for the next season, preemptively, you know, coach around fatigue and injuries, because the body clocks are set up differently now? How do you handle that?
So I completely agree with you, and it's weird today. So it's different for us in Tampa, because normally when the Stanley Cup's awarded, it's June, you're in summer, and the weather's really nice. Well, the weather's like super nice. It was like 88 degrees and beautiful. So we're not really experiencing what other people do, but you know, the life is starting. The fall is starting. Like, college football is going. All these fall sports are running and trying to get through this. And for us, it's the uncertainty again. Of there's no set date. When does training camp start? How long is it going to be? You work your load compared to that, and especially when you play as deep as we did, you know, guys need rest. Like, the biggest thing is to rest their bodies and rest their minds. And you know, I look at some other teams that have their last game was March 10th.
March, yeah.
And they weren't in the bubble. They haven't played, and so my assumption is they got to be chomping at the bit to get out there and play. And like, let's get this season started. So it's going to be different wave for everybody. And so, you know, as difficult as it was to come back and play in this environment, I think next year is going to be difficult because it's a different playing field for everybody. So it'll be interesting to see how this plays out. Like I said, we don't know what's going to go on. I think you're right about 2021, but is it going to be January 2021 or March, or what's it going to be? And I think it's going to take a couple seasons here to get us back on our season clock.
I know it's not your call here, John. You've got a coach, and you've got to deal with the circumstances, and every other coach and player has to do that. But whenever Bettman and you know, and his and whomever makes the decision to come, Would you, if you had your choice, John, would you rather have like immediate, you know what, we're not even going to try an 82-game season. We're going to slice off 20 games right away, make it a 62 or 60-game season, and just push it back longer and build in more of a cushion because we know that the corona numbers are spiking again? Or would you rather be maybe more rigid and really try to force in the 82 games? What's more appealing to you?
So this would just be my feeling only and just, you know, answering question here. Like it probably doesn't make entire sense to do the 82 games because then we'd have no choice but to go back in through the summer again. And I don't know if the summer is entirely our focal point to play in, you know, it's not really hockey season. Mm-hmm. So anyway, if it's possible and safe for everybody involved to get it, the season in, kind of set us back in the clock so it ends maybe if it can't end in June, like end it in early July or something like that. I think that would make sense. So again, that would probably cut a couple games off the regular season, but I can't sit here and say for sure. The big thing would be, you know, hopefully at one point you get to play in front of fans, so, you know, not playing in front of empty buildings and slowly maybe it's social distancing but work to more fans. That would be like best case scenario, but again, as you said, things are spiking, so it's hard to, you know, even think about that.
Yeah.
Until there's more like safety precautions going forward.
All right, John, we're gonna let you go here. But when the Stanley Cup was risen, how did it feel in your hands? And who was the first person you reached out to outside of the bubble once you finally found your cell phone, or at least had a free moment to pick it up?
Yeah. So there's a commercial that the NHL does, and it's called No Words, and it's like they hand it, it's like little video clips of they hand it to the captain or hand it to a player, and the reporter says, "How do you feel?" Mm-hmm. They kind of stutter and don't say anything, and it's like, you know, 20 montage clips of that. That's probably the best way I can explain it.
Yeah.
Like you have no words, you're just choked. Like everything is so bottled, you have no idea what to say. And now I watch that commercial, I'm like, it's so apropos of what, how we feel, or how I felt anyway. But on the ice, when I don't have my cell phone with me on the bench, so somebody went and got it for me, and I got to FaceTime my family, and my son answered, he's 10, that's like the tear jerking moment. So there's like, I think somebody took a picture of me FaceTiming them on the ice, and that was that's the one thing people don't realize is like you win the Stanley Cup, you celebrate as a team together, which was phenomenal, but the second wave of emotion was when we got off that plane. Mm-hmm. And the families ran into each other's arms, and that was, again, like people are like, hey, why are you wearing sunglasses, Cooper? Wasn't that sunny? I'm like, well, you know why? Because I was like bawling.
Yeah. That's why. Awesome.
You sure you weren't smoking the funny stuff celebrating there, coach?
No, I was all good.
Listen, the hockey family is as tight as it gets. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, 3 a.m. wake-up calls, getting to the rink. So as you painted the picture about getting to see your family, the other families, it came across very vividly. Coop, congrats. 8 years on the bench. Stanley Cup champs 2020, the Lightning. Great job, man. And really enjoyed having you on the show. Thanks a lot, John.
Most certainly. Congratulations, John.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You guys do a heck of a job. And you know, Rondé wasn't, he said it was going to be awful, but it wasn't all that bad.
Oh, come on. He just got to.
I'm just joking.
Tell him he's got to teach you the good old song since you wore the hat in your prime moment. The good old song
for
sure.
UVA. He was fired up when we wore it. He's a great guy, and it's awesome to be with you, too. Thanks.
Likewise. Take care, John.
Coach John Cooper. Thank you, John. That's great, man. That's great. I'm telling you, he was really. I was reading some articles just to refresh my memory because when they got dumped by Columbus a year ago, forced, not even a win. Mm-hmm. There's one thing to lose in the first round. You have the most points of anybody, but then you get swept. And the contrast in personality in Tortorella and Cooper is like night and day.
You know, he sounds familiar.
He was feeling it.
He sounds like Tony Bennett. Tony Bennett was the same way. You remember when he lost to UMBC?
Yep.
He handled it with perfect, like, class.
Grace. Dignity, exactly, perspective, right. No doubt. That's what great minds and that's what great motivators do. They don't choke on the situation.
Mm-hmm.
They process it. They use the trip as a way to elevate higher.
Yep.
Really enjoyed that conversation. That was cool, man. We got to get him back on the show as the season starts. That was good. All right, T, coming up next. So, and with Coach Cooper, we mentioned the NHL bubble. The NBA bubble's been a story, obviously, for the last couple of months here on the show. What about an NFL bubble? Possible. We'll get to it coming up next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free lines, 1-855-212-4227. Is brought to you by Geico. Want to know what's really scary? Seeing just how much you could have been saving on car insurance by switching to Geico. It'll keep you up at night. Switch to Geico and save. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. Tiki, since we just had a great conversation with John Cooper, the head coach of the Lightning, Stanley Cup champs, and always welcome on the show.
Yeah,
season
man.
Reboots. Get ready, you know, for the new season. Bring him on to preview.
Agreed.
He was awesome. What a gentleman. What a great coach, too. I want to tell, and resilient coach. I want to tell you, give me 30 seconds. You want to just imagine. Now, keep in mind, this is 17 years ago. Okay. I'm working in Detroit. The Wings win the Stanley Cup.
Okay.
Now, this is Scotty Bowman's team. Dominic Kosciuk's on that team. Chris Chelios. I mean, Stevie Eiserman, Sergei Fedorov. Yeah. Great. Hall of Famers everywhere.
Yeah, all-timers.
Everywhere you look, Hall of Famers.
Mm-hmm.
Igor Larionov, the professor. I mean, just name after name after name. And they roll the parade, right? Brett Hull's on the team. They roll the parade, and and they're going down Jefferson Avenue in Detroit, right? And we're all doing our shows out there. And I've got my, the name of the station was The Fan. And I've got my tent that I'm doing my midday show. It was a little loose, you know, like, you know, maybe sneak a beer during a break. Like, everybody was just the R&B station, the country music, the rap, every station was crazy. Right. And they had this one starting point where the players would get on, like, the Rolls Royce, you know what I mean? And then
they kind of
played up there.
Yeah.
Do you know that I tried to jump on Scotty Bowman's Rolls Royce and grab the cup?
It's a true story. Dude. How old were you then?
I wish I could say I was 17. I was 20.
Oh, yeah, but you were early, mid-20s.
That's
understandable.
It's close to the point of expiration.
True, but, you know, knowing you, you didn't grow up. You were a Toys R Us kid until you were 20, 33 or so.
Oh, dude. I mean, a cop just grabbed me. Bowman was laughing, but the cop grabbed me. It was crazy. I don't know. What was I going to do if I actually got on the
I don't know.
Grabbed the cup?
Hey, dude, you want to come on to my radio show?
Well, we had Scotty on a few times. But he didn't. I don't think he recognized. He just kind of knew the voice. Anyway, that was crazy. But that was a really good conversation.
If you
want to tell your hockey friends, radio.com, Apple iTunes, John Cooper, coach of the Lightning, money champions. All right. So you gotta guide me through this here a little bit. Because I'm noticing some strange inconsistencies with the possible plan on the part of the NFL to have a bubble.
Yeah.
Their chief medical officer, Dr. Alan Sills, is against shifting to a bubble environment.
Yep.
And he cites two main reasons. I don't know if mental health is number one. If it's not one, it's two. The other is that it's not a guarantee to keep out the virus. Okay. Hmm. Well, the NBA kept it out.
Yeah. So
the
did
NHL
hockey.
Kept it out.
So did the WNBA.
WNBA.
Anyone who's done a bubble, it's worked. Because
what is he talking about?
You're constantly testing, and you're constantly, I don't know, monitoring the environment that these guys are in. Now, it sucks. And I would give more credence to the mental health side of it.
I agree.
With what's the expanded roster because of coronavirus? I think it's 70-something, 73 or something like that.
Are you talking about the additional practice squad slots or just game day?
Yeah, no, the practice squad guys.
73,
74. So it's a lot of guys,
yeah,
right, that you're now managing the mental health of. That, you know, are stuck in hotels. They can't go anywhere. They can't interact with anybody other than themselves. That I could give some credence to, but I would say that that's a mitigatable, problem.
Yeah.
Mainly because these guys will realize that if we don't play, we don't get paid. Right. It becomes an economic thing. And yes, you're going to have counselors and, you know, make it less, stead and static and boring and depressing. But it might be worth it, especially given the amount of money that's at stake, not just for the league and the teams, but the players. So I hear what he's saying and I understand it, but. And I don't want to diminish at all the mental health issues that professional athletes go through.
Of course not.
But I think if this is the game that you love, you're paid handsomely, you find a way to make it work. The NBA did it, and hockey did it. And women's did it. The women NBA did it. WNBA. Yeah. Baseball is now doing it. Of course, they should find a way to do this if it makes sense for all of the players that it's going to take to house.
Of course.
I think he'd be better off saying, you know, there's just too many guys. It's 73 or 4 players.
But that's not his job.
I know, but just think about
that. The logistical aspect, that's not his concern.
But to me, that's...
I don't even want to hear him talk about that.
Agreed, but that to me would be the issue. Because you now have, I don't know, 150 per team?
Yeah, but let Goodell come out. Let Vincent say that. Let Troy Vincent say that. I don't need to hear that from the head of the NFL lead doctor.
Yeah.
You know, listen, we're not sending... I was turned off by this take here. Mm-hmm. We're not sending them to solitary confinement. We're not throwing them in the hole.
No, right.
We're throwing them. I mean, I understand. You're not with your family. I get it. And it could lead to mental health anguish issues. No doubt. We would never minimize that. It is a real thing for sure. And you've got to tackle that head on. And you've got to tackle that with intelligence, both mm-hmm. medically and acceptance. It goes without saying. We don't need to preface, even though we do, so everybody knows where we're coming from.
Yeah.
That goes without saying. But here's what he said. He said, quote, "I think we all have to recognize there are no perfect solutions here." All right, that's a fine opening statement. Nothing's perfect. First of all, a bubble is not going to keep out all infections. It's 3 for 3.
Mm-hmm.
So technically he's wrong there.
Yep.
You still have other individuals that come in and come out. Same thing with the NBA. They came in and came out, the testers, right?
Yep.
The maids, et cetera. We talked about that because that was a concern. Mm-hmm. Service workers, security, other personnel. We've known from other experiences that those individuals can be infected. You can also determine when they are. So that's probably not a big issue.
Mm-hmm.
So simply being in a bubble doesn't keep us safe. We still have to do all this with measures of mitigation, with PPE, with identifications of symptoms, testing, et cetera. Now, Sean Payton is very much for this. I don't even know where you would go.
That's the problem. That, like, the logistics are the problem. That's the issue. It's not what he's saying. And that's why I think I look at this and I'm like, what are you talking about?
It'd have to be Vegas or Arizona.
Yeah, probably. Probably more Vegas. Because I'm trying to think, I mean, New York would work, but because of I'm talking about just capacity to manage all these people.
Yeah.
But New York is never going to work, right? Because it's New York. So it's got to be a place that has tons of facilities to house people.
Yeah.
But it's not a congregating place.
Correct.
Right now.
Nor do you want to have to go through two bridges or two tunnels to get to a field.
That's right.
You hop on a bus, you're in Vegas or Nevada, you're somewhere in Nevada on the outskirts maybe, because I don't know if you want to dump, you know, the 1,300 players on the strip.
No.
That could lead to some different issues.
Yeah, you're right.
But I'm not saying that I would want to see a bubble next week here, but to so uniformly denounce the virtues of the bubble, I'm not going to say it's irresponsible, but it's confounding.
Yeah. Well,
I mean, just don't understand it.
The two cities they're looking at, and, you know, I'm just reading this, LA and Dallas, makes sense because there are fields. There's an abundance of fields, and you can, you know, distance the teams in these like smaller metropolitan areas
mm-hmm.
and still have easy access to fields all over the place. And maybe one's a college stadium, but in Texas, the college stadiums are enormous.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Same thing in Los Angeles. The thing with Los Angeles, obviously, is it could be traffic issues, but there are stadiums that are available and also lodging that's available in certain parts of the LA, larger LA area. But they have to consider this, and it's not dissimilar to every other league that thought that they could get away without doing this in a bubble. You can't, I think, get through an entire season without having some sort of bubble or just the expectation that you're not going to finish your entire year the way that it's currently scripted.
All right, I'll give you a last word on that. Let's get the update with ACK. We'll come back. We'll hammer the blast for you, Tiki and Tierney, at their ACK's update, which is right now. Here's Rich. Going to get to the blast in a moment. First up, it is time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day here on Tiki and Tierney, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. So let's go with this one. Pedro Peters in California. All right, guys, after the Bills blowout loss, do you consider the Pats the best team in the AFC East right now or still Buffalo?
Hmm.
I'm going to stick with the Bills, but I'm going to lose. I'm going to tighten that gap a little bit.
Yeah. I'm going to say it's even. I'm going to say that they pulled even because Cam is such a difference maker with this team. It's hard to judge the Pats on their Chiefs loss, mm-hmm. even because they played so great defensively in that first half. I'm going to say it's about even.
About even? Okay. Either way, it's pretty close. We kind of mm-hmm. both see it the same way. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts or your car care needs. Guarantee low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every single day. So you've got the doubleheader in baseball tonight. And one team is on the brink of being bounced. Another team's on the brink of going down 3-0. And with that, Teague, it is time to blast away. You ready to go?
Yep, let's do it.
All right, let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you five stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for the Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, how about rookie Chase Claypool of the Steelers? He is putting on a show. Through 4 weeks, he leads the team in touchdowns and receiving yards, while Juju Smith-Schuster is only on pace for 750 yards this season. How concerned are we about Juju's start to the season?
Not very. You know, I'd be concerned if he was disruptive and his lack of production was meant that there was a lack of offensive production as a whole. But this Steelers team is loaded with offensive talent. Ben Roethlisberger looks healthy, and he's distributing the ball in so many different ways. And Chase Claypool was just the latest with his 4 touchdowns, 3 receiving and 1 rushing. So I'm not concerned at all. Am I concerned that Juju is going to be maybe a little bit upset? Possibly, but I think he's a team player, and he'll be fine.
See, I'm concerned not in the emotional sense how he's going to handle this, but I'm just concerned that maybe Juju Smith-Schuster is not quite the player I thought he was. 188 yards receiving through 4 games. Now, last year was the excuse. Remember, 2 years ago, well, now it's really 3 years ago, was when he went bonkers. And obviously, when you have AB on the other side, you're going to get loose a lot because he's getting double-teamed across the way. But, you know, last year he's a little bit banged up, and he struggled with the ascension to that one spot, different set of circumstances, different responsibility, different defender on you in most cases. And then he's followed up what was a disappointing last year with a mystifying this year. Like, he is invisible.
Mm-hmm.
Invisible. So I'm not concerned about him disrupting the harmony of the team, but I am concerned that Juju might be kind of a one-hit wonder. Still a good player, but maybe not the great player that we thought he could have been. Or maybe more specifically was tracking to be. All right, according to the power rankings on NFL.com, the Packers are the best team in football right now with the Chiefs right behind them. So who make up our two top teams right now? I've got to give a little props to the Seattle Seahawks. I've got to. I know they've got issues on defense. Keep in mind, though, they've won the last few without Jamal Adams. And I know Jamal Adams in coverage is not quite the same as Jamal Adams disrupting the line of scrimmage or getting in the backfield, either at the running back or the quarterback. But eventually, he's going to make some splash plays that will make them better. The Chiefs, I'm a little worried about them. They were minus 10 in the time of possession the other day. You know, they got gashed by the Raiders in the air, gave up a lot of runs. They were pushed around a little bit. I'm going to say the two best teams are Green Bay and Seattle.
Yeah, interesting. It's hard not to look at the Tennessee Titans after last night and say, how are they not in this conversation? They're 4-0. They're outscoring their opponents by 32 points or so in aggregates over 4 games. It's, you know, a touchdown, more than a touchdown a game. And then I like the Seattle Seahawks from the very beginning of the season, mainly because Russell Wilson just feels like he's a magician and can get anything done when they need it to get done. Their defense still worries me a little bit. So I probably, if I'm going to pick one AFC, one NFC, I'd probably say the Titans and the Packers, even though the Seahawks, I believe, are going to go farther because the Packers are playing great defense right now.
All right, Teague, according to Woj, before the Sixers hired Doc Rivers, the Rockets were planning on offering Rivers their job vacant, their vacant job. Would Rivers have been a better fit in Houston?
I don't think so. I mean, I like Doc a lot, but I think dealing with the two stars there is going to take a unique mind and a unique offensive strategy, Russell Westbrook and James Harden. Now, unless, as BT surmised, the Houston Rockets say, we're done with this James Harden experiment and trade him to Philadelphia, and he ends up playing under Doc Rivers anyways, which would be amazing. because you obviously have a shooter now. I don't think he would have been better off in Houston than he is in Philadelphia with the 76ers. I think that's where he's going to use his skills to the best of his ability to make them better. I don't know if he's going to make the Houston Rockets better.
I agree. I think it's a better fit in terms of personality. Doc's a blue-collar guy. Mm-hmm. There's not a blue-collar element or can't be one in Houston, but you don't get the sense with this team there's really anything blue-collar about it, you know. I mean, Westbrook plays hard. Really hard. I shouldn't say that. But for the most part, it's, you know, try to score 130 points and outscore you. I think that it would have been an odd fit because what you're trying to correct in Houston right now is a litany of postseasons that are not commensurate with what you've accomplished during the regular season.
Yeah.
And I don't think Doc Rivers is that guy to fix that because Doc Rivers himself has choked many times. Nobody's had more 3-1 choke jobs than Doc, and I like Doc, but it's on his resume. Whereas Philly is trying to rectify a little bit of a malaise that also encompasses the regular season.
Yeah, like culture.
Culture. And yep. He is a culture guy. Did it with the Magic, did it with the Celtics. You know, and I really like Doc for Philly a lot. Listen, he's still a great basketball man, so it wouldn't have been a bad mm-hmm. hire. I just think Philly's much better than Houston in terms of a good landing spot for him. All right, Yankees owner Hal Steinbrenner says Aaron Boone's manager job is safe. Does Boone deserve another shot, or is he just maybe not the leader we thought he would be? First of all, you have to understand that ridiculous decision to yank Garcia after game two and go to Hap.
Yeah, you mean Aaron second, Boone's first not inning,
made,
yeah.
Pardon first. Me, in, yeah, in, well, but in game two, I'm saying.
In
second inning. That is not Aaron Boone's decision. Now, I'm not saying he's not consulted on some level. Even Cashman went so far as to say, you know, we put all our cards at the table. We come to a uniform agreement, blah, blah, blah. But it's a lot of the nerds who have infiltrated the Yankee front office who are kind of dictating that, and Cashman signs up on it. The problem is Boone does a lot well. Like, even last year, they were ravaged with injuries, and he pieced it together. He's steady, but he explodes when he has to. He's gotten on the umps, which I like. Not too much. Not unnecessarily, but he's got enough fire. He has been outmanaged in spots where this is what makes you either a successful Yankee manager or not. He deserves to come back, but if he's bounced next year in a way that we can say clearly that the other manager outmanaged him again, then he's got
to
go.
Yeah, and let's also not forget they do need to upgrade their talent and their rotation. It just is what it is.
Yep.
They've had
Trevor
issues.
Bauer. Get our guy Bauer in
yeah,
there.
I mean, he's free, right?
Let's go.
I mean,
1 year, 30 mil.
They have to do something. They have it partly right with Gerrit Cole, but Tanaka's never going to live up to the expectation. I like him. He's the back of the rotation guy right now.
He's a free agent, by the way, T. No guarantees he's even back.
That's a good point. But still, you know what I mean. When he came here, we were like, dude, this guy's going to be whatever. He never reached it. It's not all his fault. He battled through a ton of injuries, man. But they got to get their rotation right. They have the bats. They have the fielding. If they don't get their rotation, it won't matter who the skip is.
I do think they need to find another bat that puts the ball in play. And you've got to re-sign DJ LeMahieu. That's a given. Sanchez got to go, but there's still too many swing and miss guys. You can't win World Series championships when you strike out 9, 10, 12, 13 times a game.
Now look at the Rays. Look what they do, right? You give them an extra base runner, Jose Altuve. They're going to take advantage of it. They are going to get the hit that's going to bring the guy in.
They are a terrific team. They're the best team in baseball. Best team in baseball, the Rays. They really are. Let's get to Zach Greinke of the Astros. Explained why he doesn't miss having fans at games this season. He said, quote, because then there's no one there to talk to you or ask for autographs and want pictures and all that stuff. I don't like to do that stuff. It's nice not having them for me. Most people like it. I don't like it. End quote. Disturbing or refreshing to hear the honesty?
It's just interesting. I wonder, does he have a social anxiety issue?
He does. That's part of it. He definitely does.
I wonder, if it's so bad that you don't want to interact with fans?
Yep.
It's neither. It's not refreshing or disturbing. It's his reality. Mm-hmm. Ricky Williams was famously this way also. If Ricky was playing now, he'd probably, be one of the elite players in football.
Because he wouldn't be suspended.
Exactly. That's my point. He smoked weed to, deal with his anxiety, and he got suspended, and then
kept
he was
his helmet
out.
On. Remember
kept,
that?
Yeah, he's doing an interview. Not like tilted up helmet, like full helmet, like he was getting ready to go play. This is just it's not disturbing. It's definitely not disturbing because obviously he's chronicled with his social anxiety issue. It's not refreshing because fans are a big part of what we do here. It just is.
Yeah, I don't latch on to either one of those words either. It's absolutely not refreshing. And I love candid responses. But, you know, if there was no social anxiety disorder, which we obviously are aware of and respect, and this was his position, we'd be destroying him. Mm-hmm. And it would be anything but refreshing. It would be unacceptable because the fans, you know, they pay the freight. I mean, they do. I'll always defend the fans. Disturbing? No, I appreciate his honesty. I don't know, is this a manipulation a little bit of the quote? Like, did he reference his anxiety? That would have made it perfect.
Yeah.
It seems confrontational. I don't think it's derived from that. I don't think that's his intention. So I would encourage people to really understand that this gentleman has a real affliction that has plagued him for years, and leave it at that.
Time's up. The blast is over for another day.
Hey, BT, before we head into break, you know, there's a big game that's happening this weekend, Georgia at Alabama. Mm-hmm. But Nick Saban has just tested positive for the coronavirus.
Wow.
Yeah, this is a big deal. The head coach of the Crimson Tide is likely to be unavailable on the sideline in a big game. The East's best team, the SEC East in Georgia taking on the West best team in Alabama. Yeah, this is a big deal. It's a big story. I mean, we can follow up on it tomorrow. I'm sure you hear a lot about it today and even tomorrow morning. But remember, they've already had one game canceled with LSU, Florida, being canceled because Florida had 19 positive cases. Mm-hmm. The SEC is seeing what we all expected. And this is why we say the Big Ten and the Pac-12, we think they're getting 8 games in 8 weeks and 7 games in 7 weeks, respectfully, is not going
to
happen.
Not happening. Now you just have to hope, although it's probably unlikely to think that none of his players are going to catch it from him.
You hope not.
You think about that, unless he's been practicing with... you know, from the top of the, you know, the crane where the coaches sit up, which I know he's not.
No.
Well, to be determined. Hopefully not. Hopefully the coach is okay. Certainly puts a little damper on what's going to be the best game of the weekend, no doubt. Teague, I'll see you tomorrow, brother.
Yep,
everybody. Yep. Enjoy your night. Safe, sensible, sane. We'll see you.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.